And please open your Bibles to the book of Ezekiel. We're starting a five-week series on Ezekiel this morning. My name's Campbell Markham, pastor here at Cornerstone Presbyterian. It's a very warm welcome to you, to our regulars and to visitors we have with us. You're very welcome. We hope you can stay behind afterwards for a cup of tea, cup of coffee, and a chance to chat to some of our regulars. Great to see Shirley here. Welcome back, Shirley. It's been at least 2 months, yes, so it's great to have you back, and we've been praying for you regularly. In March, we had a visiting missionary, Kent Hodge, come and speak to us. He's from Nigeria. He works in a theological college in Jos, which is in central Nigeria, with his wife, Ruth, and he came and spoke to some of our youth and to a gathering of people at the Dales House in Blackmans Bay, and many of us were there. And we got to hear Kent speak about his ministry in Nigeria. On Tuesday, Kent returned to Nigeria from Australia. He was picked up from the airport by his friend Emmanuel and two others, and he was driving back to his house in Jos in Nigeria when armed men carrying AK-47s sprayed a whole line of cars, a random line of cars, with bullets. His friend Emmanuel was hit in the eye and killed instantly. There were dozens of cars that were obviously stopped, and then the armed men robbed each and every person in those cars. When they got to Kent, they couldn't believe that he wasn't carrying more money on him because he was a Westerner. He explained that he was a missionary. He didn't carry money. When they heard he was a missionary, they got more angry with him because they were Muslims. They ordered him to walk into the bush. He thought that he was going to be shot in the back, and they didn't shoot him. He's now in his house in Nigeria, recovering from the attack and grieving for the loss of his friend Emmanuel. And I have no doubt that God looks very different to Kent Hodge now. Wouldn't you think? Wouldn't you think that after something like that happening to you, that God would just become different? You'd just see him differently. The whole world would look different after being attacked in that way and seeing a friend killed in front of your eyes. You see, when we're traumatized, everything that we believe is shaken up. When something bad happens to us, everything in our life is tipped upside down. Everything looks different. And that must certainly have been the case with Ezekiel, this book we are looking at today. Look with me at the first verse. In the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kibar River, the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. So here we have this man, Ezekiel, and he's a Jewish man and he's come from Jerusalem in Judea. And he's 30 years old. 30 is when the priests began their service in the temple. Ezekiel was a priest. He'd been trained to be a priest. So it was right at the age that he was going to begin his life's work as a priest in the temple. But 5 years before that, as we saw in 2 Kings chapter 24, read to us by Gerald, 5 years before that, in the year 597 BC, King Nebuchadnezzar came down from Babylon and surrounded Jerusalem, and King Jehoiakim surrendered Jerusalem to Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar came into Jerusalem and he came into the temple and he stripped the temple of all of its gold and all of the gold articles and items in the temple, including, quite possibly, the Ark of the Covenant. That would have been too difficult to resist. There was a lot of gold in the Ark of the Covenant. And 10,000 of the nation's leaders and their best and their brightest were deported 800 kilometres to the north, to the land of Babylon. So I want you to picture this man, Ezekiel. At the time, he was 25. He'd been trained to be a priest since he was a boy. And now here he is, 5 years later, in Babylon, and he can't be a priest. And he'd be thinking these kinds of thoughts. Well, Judah, the land I came from, that's God's land. That's where God's present. And now I'm separated from God's land. It's 800 kilometres away. And the temple, that's God's house in Jerusalem. And it's been stripped bare. All of the gold has been taken out. And quite possibly even the ark, the throne of God, has been removed. And God made a covenant, didn't he, with his people? I will be your God. You will be my people. Where's that covenant now? Where's God? Where's the promise of God? He said he would be our God, that we would be his people. And now his city is in ruins, the temple is stripped bare, and I and 10,000 others are languishing in a pagan land in Babylon where God surely is not present. In other words, the world, according to Ezekiel, had disintegrated. Everything he believed had been flipped upside down. His whole theology, his whole mindset of who God is and what God's like had been rocked to the core. Can you understand how this man Ezekiel must have been feeling? God's in Judah. I'm not in Judah. God's temple is his home. The temple's destroyed. God's made a covenant to be with his people. Where's that covenant now? It looks like it's been ripped up. Everything he believed was being shaken and challenged. Where is God? Can God see me? Can he see his people all the way up here in Babylon? Can God act in Babylon, in this pagan land? And why are we suffering? Why are God's people suffering? Who is God? At the end of the day, Ezekiel would be asking that question. Who is God anyway? All that he had believed had been shaken to the core. And don't you and I face those same kinds of crises? Someone lets us down. A health problem. Something goes wrong with our children. We lose a job. Our career is not going in the direction we thought it was. And when these traumas strike us, everything is shaken up. And it's good to see Shirley, and many of us visited Shirley, and we know that Shirley was in hospital, in pain, was shaken up. Where's God? What's he doing in my life? We've all experienced that. We all experienced that. And especially in those times of trial and trauma, because we can't see Jesus, because he is invisible to us, we are tempted to think, is he really there? Is the Bible true? Or is it all a lie? Is it all just made up? It's at those times of crisis and trauma that everything is questioned. And that's what it was like for Ezekiel. He was questioning everything. But let's look at what happened then. In the 30th year, on the 4th month, on the 5th day, while I was among the exiles by the Kebar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the 5th of the month, it was the 5th year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kebar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was upon him. You see those terms there? Here's Ezekiel. Who's God? Where's God? What's God like? His whole theology has been shattered by what's happened. And what happens? The heavens are opened. And he sees visions of God. And the word of the Lord comes to him, and the hand of God comes upon Ezekiel, and God shows himself to Ezekiel. In that moment of trauma and crisis, God shows himself to Ezekiel. And what God shows to Ezekiel is very, very strange. Who had an opportunity to read Ezekiel 1 this week? Well, I'm sure you've read it in the past. It is very strange. And don't think that it's just us who find it strange. Oh, well, we are modern Westerners, so of course this is strange to us. No, no, no. This was strange for Ezekiel as well. Rest assured. This would have been very, very eye-opening for him as well. Very confronting. In fact, 20 times in this chapter, he uses the word like. God shows himself, and Ezekiel tries to describe it, and words fail him. It was a bit like this, it was a bit like that, and what I saw was like this. In fact, towards the end of the chapter, he uses the phrase, the appearance of, the likeness of. He just can't grasp all that is appearing to him. I think one of the greatest interpreters of the Bible that God's given to the church is John Calvin. And John Calvin was lecturing on Ezekiel when he died. He got up to chapter 20 and then he died, so we didn't get all of his explanation of the book of Ezekiel. Listen to what Calvin says near the start in his first lecture. He says about Ezekiel, I confess its obscurity, he says. One of the greatest Bible teachers. I confess its obscurity. I can scarcely understand it, he says. Yet, what God has set before us, it is not only lawful and useful, but necessary to inquire. Yes, it's strange, but it's lawful and it's necessary for us to grapple with the strange things that God showed Ezekiel. God's revelation of himself. It helped Ezekiel, it's going to help us. Now, as we look at this vision of God, don't try to fit all the bits together into some kind of coherent picture. You'll go crazy. And I've seen artists try to depict what Ezekiel is described here, and they always fail. It always looks just silly. Have you seen those pictures? Artists trying to describe this. It's not meant to be put down, I believe, in a picture, because there are parts that just don't fit with other parts. You can't do it. What I want us to do is to look at each part, each picture in turn, and to ask what it teaches about our God, Jesus Christ. And we're going to see in this chapter that our God, Jesus Christ, is powerful. We're going to see that he is present. We're going to see that he sees everything. We're going to see that he is above everything. And we're going to see that he speaks. And just like 95% of other sermons, the first points will be the longer ones and then they'll get shorter as I go along. So don't despair after the first 3 points. First thing that Ezekiel teaches us, that this vision teaches us, is that our God, Jesus Christ, is all-powerful. Put on your seatbelts. You ready? God revealing himself to Ezekiel and to us. I looked, and I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning, and surrounded by brilliant light. The centre of the fire looked like glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like 4 living creatures. In appearance, their form was that of a man, but each of them had 4 faces, and 4 wings. Their legs were straight, their feet were like those of a calf, and gleamed like burnished bronze, or sparked like bronze when hit with a hammer. Under their wings, on their 4 sides, they had the hands of a man. All 4 of them had faces and wings, and their wings touched one another. Each one went straight ahead, they did not turn as they moved. Their faces looked like this. Each of the 4 had the face of a man. And on the right side, each had the face of a lion. And on the left side, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. Their wings were spread out upward. Each had two wings, one touching the wing of the other creature on either side, and two wings covering its body. Each one went straight ahead, wherever the spirit would go. They would go, without turning as they went. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire, or like torches. So that word like is like this, is like that. Can't quite put into words. Fire moved back and forth among the creatures. It was bright, and lightning flashed out of it. Now, this is something you would have to observe through a welder's mask. Because did you notice all the pictures here of fire and lightning and glowing metal? And Mum and Dad always said, kids, don't look at the sun. Don't look at the sun. If you look at the sun, it's too powerful, you see. It burns the eyes. It will blind you. And this picture here of God revealing himself to Ezekiel, it's blinding. You've got to see all those words there. Fire, lightning, molten metal, sparks. It's a very bright and powerful image. And this all points to one thing. The sheer power of God. Think of the four creatures as well. With four faces. The second strangest part of the vision. The stranger part's coming. The face of a man. Possibly pointing to the brains and the intellect of human beings. And then the face of a lion, the mightiest of the wild beasts. And then the ox, the most powerful of the domestic animals. And then the eagle, the greatest of the birds, the bird that flies higher than any other bird. And all of these animals, so the human and the three animals, they're all about power. It's all about strength. And God is saying, Ezekiel, I'm powerful. Because here's Ezekiel, and he's been ripped away from his homeland. And Judea is destroyed, and the temple's been gutted. Who looks like the powerful one to Ezekiel? Who's the powerful one? Nebuchadnezzar. He's the powerful one, right? It's the Babylonians. They're the powerful ones. And God says, no, no, Ezekiel. Let me blow your mind for a moment and show you a glimpse of a little bit of my power. Let me show you a bit of my power. And Ezekiel sees in a way that shattered all of his preconceptions. The sheer, infinite power of God. By the way, the four creatures, which later on in chapter 10 he calls cherubim, they're angels. Now, they're a bit like the angels on the Ark of the Covenant, right? A little bit like that, except instead of two of them, there's now four of them. And instead of having two wings, now they have four wings. And instead of having one face, now they have four faces. And I think God was saying something like this to Ezekiel. Ezekiel, just in case you thought that around me there was actually, you know, just two angels, and they had actually just two wings, and you were locking yourself into the symbols I had given you in the past. And you were thinking that those symbols, which just reflect my glory and reflect those around me, you were beginning to think that there was nothing beyond that. That's all I am. No, no, Ezekiel. And he takes the images that had already appeared within the temple, within the tabernacle, and he multiplies them and expands them and gives so many more facets to them, showing Ezekiel that however I have symbolized myself in the past, they are only symbols, Ezekiel. They are only signs. You can only see traces of my true glory. So, here's Ezekiel. Overawed by the power of Babylon, and God says, no, Ezekiel, look, I am the powerful one. And I think how easy it is for us to be overawed by the power of those around us, by our society, by what's going on. I think of Peter on the night that Jesus was betrayed. Peter saying, Jesus, even if they crucify you, I'll go with you. I'll be with you. I'll never leave you. And then we have that pathetic scene at the end of Matthew's Gospel. And Jesus is being interrogated in the high priest's palace. And outside there's the courtyard. And who comes to Peter? A servant girl. A servant girl, that's all. And she says, hey, weren't you with that man in there who's being interrogated? I never knew him, he said. You see, he's frightened. He's frightened of a servant girl. And how easy it is for us to be frightened of those around us and frightened by what's going on in the world. And you see, Peter forgot. He forgot who Jesus was. He forgot the power of God. He forgot that he doesn't need to be frightened of anyone. Stand up. The only power he really had to take into consideration was the power of God. And this image, this vision that we see in Ezekiel reminds us that there's only one person whose power we need to be frightened of. And that is the power of God. So that's the first point, that Jesus Christ, our God Jesus Christ, is all-powerful. Second point, our God Jesus Christ is present. Look with me, verse 14. So here we are with these creatures. The creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning. And as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its four faces. This was the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkled like chrysolite, and all four looked alike. Each appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in any one of the four directions the creatures faced. The wheels did not turn about as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome, and all four rims were full of eyes all around. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved. And when the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, and the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When the creatures moved, they also moved. When the creatures stood still, they also stood still. And when the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. So here we have these four cherubim, these four angels with four faces. And for someone reading this at the time that it was written, that you couldn't help but think of the four points of the compass, the four cardinal points. Four compass points, four creatures. And they have four wings, so they are fast and they are mobile. And they speed back and forth, how? Like lightning. They move at the speed of lightning. There's nothing faster than lightning. And they're connected somehow to these wheels, these four massive wheels, which are a wheel intersecting with a wheel. And with, you know, David Van Emmerich, who's an engineer, will explain to you how that could work later on, or not, because it's a supernatural picture here. It's inexplicable. But the point is this, that this is God's chariot, you see. This is God's throne. It's his chariot, borne by these four angels. And where is God? Where's God? God is everywhere, this is saying. Imagine how this would have come across to Ezekiel, who, his whole life, he would have been thinking, Judea, that's God's land, and Jerusalem is God's city, and the temple is God's house. When I was a kid, I thought that God lived at the corner of Birkdale Street and Salvado Road in Florent Park in the Salvation Army Citadel there, the Salvation Army Hall. I really thought that. When I was about seven, I used to look at that building and I think, God's in there. That's where God is. And Ezekiel would have been, there he is up in Babylon, he he's seeking God. He's down at Jerusalem. And he's in the temple, and the temple's been stripped. But that's where God is. That's where God's located. We're up here in Babylon, God's down there. And God says, no, Ezekiel, I'm everywhere. Why? I'm not a prisoner of the temple. My throne is not bolted to the ground. It's on wheels. And I move like lightning. Ezekiel, I'm with you. I'm there. I'm everywhere, God the Son. And when the angel came to Mary and said, a son will be born to you, what's the name that the angel gave to the child? They will call him Emmanuel, God with us. Jesus said, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, there I will be among you. And we read at the start of John chapter 14 that the disciples, when Jesus was telling them that he was going away, he was telling them, he was leaving them, and they were terrified. And they were starting to fall to pieces. Jesus, you can't leave us. And he said, do not be troubled. Do not fear. I will send another comfort, he said. The Holy Spirit, my Spirit, will be with you. I will be present with my people wherever you go. You see, what this is saying to Ezekiel, what it's saying to us, is that Jesus, our God, Jesus, is with his people wherever you are. And whatever's going on, he's with you. He's mobile. He moves like lightning. He's there. Reminds me of Stephen. And as they threw rocks at him and he fell on his knees and was dying, what happened? He was given that the heavens were torn open, and he was enabled to see just before he died what was true, what had been true the whole time. That Jesus was there. And Jesus was standing there ready to receive Stephen into heaven. Now don't think that Jesus just appeared on the scene at that moment while Stephen was being stoned. No, Stephen was unable to see what had been true all along. That Jesus was there. Our God, Jesus Christ, is with his people wherever they are. Third point is this, that Jesus Christ sees everything. And I said that I thought the second strangest part of the vision was the four creatures with the four faces. But I don't know about you, but I think the even stranger part are these awesome wheels, which are massive and interlocking, that are full of eyes. And it's that mixture of human body parts with something mechanical that seems to make it so strange, don't you think? It's such a strange picture. What's the point? There's a point to everything. There's a point to every part of the scripture. The point is this. He sees. From his throne, he sees. He sees everything. He knows everything. Because there's Ezekiel up in Babylon, 800 kilometres away from God's house back in Jerusalem, which has been stripped bare. And he's thinking, does God know? Does God see? Does he know what's happening to me? Does he know what's happening to his people up here? And we think the same, don't we? Those times of crisis, those times of trauma. Kent Hodge in Nigeria, does God see this? He's walking into the bush wondering if he's going to be shot in the back. Does God see this? Does God know? God said to Ezekiel, I see everything. I know everything. Jesus sees whatever is going on. I love that little story at the start of John's Gospel, where Philip goes to his friend Nathanael and says, you know, you've got to come and meet this guy that we've met. He's awesome. You've got to come and meet him. He's the Messiah. He's the Christ. And what was Nathanael's reply? Well, he's from Nazareth, isn't he? Can anything good? Anything good come from Launceston or Nazareth or wherever else? And then Jesus meets Nathanael and he says, here is a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false. And Nathanael knows exactly what's going on. He knows that Jesus has seen and heard everything. How did you know me? He says to Jesus. I saw you, said Jesus. I saw you while you were under the fig tree before Philip called you. He sees everything. And in Luke 9, we can't help smile a little bit when that argument erupted amongst the disciples. I think Jesus was either way ahead of them or way behind them, but there they are, this little huddle of disciples going along the road, and there's an argument developing. What's the argument about? Well, is Steve Fair going to be the greatest, or is it going to be Simon Brewster? Or Des Richardson, or Ian? Who's going to be the greatest? Which one of us is going to be? And they're arguing about who's going to be the greatest. And then we read Jesus, knowing their thoughts, he put a little child into the midst and said, well, you've got to be like this. Kingdom of Heaven's about this. You've got to have this kind of humility. And I can pick on the elders because they're the humblest men I know. I can use them as my humorous illustration because they are humble men. But the point is that Jesus, he knew their thoughts. And David said, O Lord, you've searched me and you know me, he said. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. There's the wheel you see with the eyes. Strange, but a wonderful truth. That our great God, Jesus Christ, sees and knows exactly what's going on in your life right now. Don't think Jesus doesn't know. Don't think he doesn't see you lying awake at night with your worries. Don't think he didn't see that horrible, hurtful thing that was said about you, to you. Don't think he doesn't see that conflict in your home. Don't think he doesn't see the financial pressure, the disappointment with your studies or career. Don't think he doesn't see that. He sees it all. He knows it all. It's all within his grasp. Nothing is outside of his sight. He knows it all. But although he sees it all, it doesn't mean that he is a captive of it all. Because look at this next point here. The next point is this, that Jesus Christ, our God Jesus Christ, is transcendent. Transcendent. Look at verse 27. It's our fourth point. Spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked like an expanse. In fact, it's the same word used in Genesis 1:4, the firmament. And the firmament was the limit of creation. It's the same word here. This expanse, the firmament, the limit of creation. So, spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked like a firmament, an expanse, sparkling like ice and awesome. Under the firmament, their wings were stretched out one toward the other, and each had two wings covering its body. And when the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. And when they stood still, they lowered their wings. Then there came a voice from above the expanse, over their heads, as they stood with lowered wings. Above the expanse, over their heads, was what looked like a throne of sapphire. You see the picture? You've got the God's chariot, and then you've got the firmament, the limits of all creation. Then above that is a throne of sapphire. And high above, on the throne, was a figure like that of a man. And I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire, and that from there down he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day. So was the radiance around him. And Ezekiel might have thought that God, whose city is Jerusalem, and whose house is the temple, and whose throne is the ark, might have thought that God was trapped in there, trapped in creation, and that God was just as much a victim of circumstances as his people. And just as his people had been forcibly carried away to Babylon, that God too had somehow been controlled and conquered by these forces beyond his power. And what does God show Ezekiel here? Where is he in relation to all the things that are happening on the earth? These things that dominated the life of Ezekiel, where is God in relation to these things? Far above. You see, he made the world, and his presence in the world, but he transcends the world. He's not bound by the world. He's not bound by the things that bind us. And it reminds me straight away of that astonishing picture of Jesus. And there are the disciples in the boat. You know the story. The wind is howling. The waves are crashing. And they think they're going to drown. You see, creation is about to swamp them. Creation is about to consume them. And along comes Jesus. And what's he doing? He's walking above it all. He's walking on those great waves. He's not even close to being threatened by them, or swamped by them, consumed by them. The wind is nothing to him. The waves are nothing to him. He walks over the top of them. He is the transcendent one. And you see, when these hard things happen, as they happen to Ezekiel and they happen to us, when these hard things happen, we're so tempted to think that God is just as crippled as we are. He is just as bound as we are. He's just as helpless as we are. And the one person that we lean on in those times, himself, is threatened by these things, threatened to be consumed by these things. But God showed Ezekiel. Jesus showed Ezekiel. His throne is far above. He transcends it all. Final point. Our great God, Jesus Christ, he speaks. Verse 24. If you had to have your welder's mask on for the first bit, what do you have to have on here? Your ear, what are they called, Steve? Not earmuffs. Earmuffs. Alright. I thought earmuffs were furry and you wore them in the snow. But the things that protect your hearing, that's what you need right here in verse 24. Because it's noisy. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. And then there came a voice from above the expanse over their heads as they stood with lowered wings. And what this told Ezekiel is not only Ezekiel is God powerful, and not only is he present, and not only does he see exactly what's happening to you, yet he's transcendent. He's not bound by these things. He is speaking to it. He's speaking to you. He's telling you what's going on. He's giving you words of comfort. He's giving you words of help. He's communicating. God is not silent. Isn't that the worst thing? When you cry out to someone for help, and what do you get? Muteness. Nothing. Nothing said. You long for that word of help, that word for comfort, and nothing comes. It's the most cruel thing. And how cruel it would be if God looked on Ezekiel and his circumstances and looked on you and your circumstances and just folded his arms and shut his mouth and said nothing. It would destroy you. And God says, what this vision shows is that God speaks. We're going to look at what God says over the next 4 weeks. We've got to the end of chapter 1. Over the next 4 weeks, we're going to look at what God said and what God showed Ezekiel in his crisis, in his trauma. But for now, know that God has something to say to you, something to say to me. And I'm finishing with this. Every sermon is supposed to have an application. It's at this moment that I'm supposed to give you the nitty-gritty of how to apply this in your home and in your workplace and on campus and at school and with your friends. And in relation to love and money and time and all the other things. And it's good to do that. We must always carefully apply God's word to all of life. But there's one application here, and I'm going to stop with it. Because what did Ezekiel do? How did he respond? What was his response to what he saw? This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of God. You see, Ezekiel's just seen God. He's just seen God, or at least the appearance of the likeness of God, wrapped in cloud. And when I saw it, I fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking. When I saw it, I fell face down. And what we're going to do now is just stop. We're just going to stop and I'm going to shut up. And we're just going to ponder the things we've seen today. We've seen our great God, Jesus Christ, perhaps as we've never seen him before. We're just going to ponder these things. And we will pray on our own. We'll just pray silently. And after a little while, the musicians will come up and lead us in our final song. Ezekiel fell face down. Some of you might like to kneel. We have the room for it now. That's okay. Don't worry about those around you. If you want to kneel and ponder this image of what you've seen, and just come before God in prayer, then please do that.